from across the Volunteer State, the countdown to kickoff with your exclusive scouting report. Welcome to the coaches meeting. Coach to coach.
Vols took the national stage Saturday night and dominated NC State and an experienced signal caller. A better opponent. So, Doug Matthews, what did you learn about this 24 Vols team in Charlotte?
Another step into what could be, and I think probably will be, a pretty successful season for Tennessee. We saw some improvement in some of the areas, the lessons from the first ball game. But the big thing, I think, this was that the way that they played, the way that they won, played for four quarters, was able to get a lot of younger players, but more importantly, soakers in there that are going to be very key to this team as they go through the rest of this season. It was a good win. It was a big win. It was, again, as what I think a lot of people thought, and I still do think will be, a quality opponent.
Well, I thought they played very composed, the whole thing. The whole thing was they played composed. They were resilient. They overcame some things early. They had a physical mindset on both sides of the football. But once they hit the accelerator and got things rolling, they were going very, very strong. They got stronger as the game progressed. That was impressive to me.
This is a game that head coaches like to talk about afterwards to their team, and certainly when they get back on the practice field. It was a total team win. Very good offense, outstanding defense, kicking game, all big parts of it. You score on defense. There's some things that you have to be cleaned up, as always, but it was a total team win all the way around.
All three phases contributed to this win. I thought the offense ran the ball very, very strong. The defense was dominant. That was a dominant, dominant defensive performance. And then the special teams, especially the big four, punt, punt return, kickoff return, they were very, very solid. That was a total win by a football team that is getting progressively better.
What Coach Heupel was able to do, in these two coordinators and also the position coaches at their particular positions were able to do afterwards, and it's always a lot better to do it after a win. All right, what do we need to do now to get better? A couple of things from a team standpoint. Certainly, silly penalties. When you get a penalty after the whistle is blown or before the snap is made, it's a silly penalty. Clean those up. Pretty easily done. And then the other thing would be to tighten up, I think, the pass protection. The good thing about from watching this game and then rewatching it is that almost every single thing that was somewhat of a problem in this game was something that could be corrected on the practice field. It wasn't physical. It was something that could be like the penalties, things like that. Pass protection, technique, few technique things there. All of those will be able to be worked out on the practice field.
A couple of picks from Nico Iamaliava. We know that Josh Heupel is a tough grader. Dave, I bet he likes having that on tape.
The first interception that he threw was just a bad read and a bad throw. That Josh Heupel really benefited from being able to point out to him, say, hey, look, this right here, you've got to grow from this. You can't not do this, especially once we get into the Southeastern Conference. This could be a game changer. So let's learn from this. Let's move on. He absolutely, absolutely wanted to sit down and look through those things with this young quarterback, because it's going to be a constant of being able to teach this young quarterback as this season progresses.
The interception for a touchdown, even the best of quarterbacks, that happened when he got hit his arm, ball went up in the air. I don't give him any problem with that. And the other one, the coach Mac just talked about, it was a bad throw. But I think what Coach Heupel will point out, and Coach Halsey, the quarterback coach, will point out, he was throwing the ball where he should have thrown it. It was as a middle crossing route, about 15 yards deep. He threw it a little bit too high, but the way a good way of coaching on this, hey, poor throw, but man, you saw where that was, where we should have gone with the football. Just need to have a little bit better accuracy on it.
The lessons from NC State coming up as the Vols now prepare to face Kent State. Week two was the week of the underdog, highlighted by Notre Dame's loss to Northern Illinois. Doug brought lessons to this show when we started more than a decade ago. So, Doug, when you've lost twice in this fashion in 3 years, is there a lesson there? Is there not more to it? It's not just a fluke, is it?
It's not, and it is almost always on that, about 85, 90, maybe even 100% on the coach. This particular game for Notre Dame, Northern Illinois, probably didn't have a single starter on that team that would have started, maybe even would have been a key backup at Notre Dame. So when you, as a coach, when you lose a game like that, and particularly the way that they lost it, they were outplayed for four quarters in that ball game. You have to go back and look and say, okay, what are we doing? Are we not getting our team ready to play? Obviously, why is that? But the big thing is, you know, the old thing in coaching is you're either allowing it to happen, all right, or you're not doing anything to keep it from happening. That's why you're a coach. And I think in this game in particular, and I watched almost the whole ball game, that was a very unprepared team, and they didn't do anything to change it during the ball game, and that's all on a coaching staff.
You got to go back and check and see, be honest with yourself. Did we take these people too lightly? And you've got to get a sense for that. You've got to be able to attack something like that, especially coming off of a big win and then playing up an opponent that should not measure up to you man for man on the football team the next week. Their football team, man to man, doesn't measure up to the talent that Notre Dame has. Did I allow my staff, did I allow these players to just relax a little bit thinking, because of what we've done previously, it's just going to come naturally out there on the field the next Saturday? You've got to really, really honestly answer that and go back and really think and dig deep. Am I allowing that to seep in, and am I not stopping it immediately? Or don't even let it get started. Be able to say, as you, when you start those meetings on that Monday, when you're getting ready for that next opponent, lock in, forget what we did last week. We got to lock in on these people, and here's the people we have to stop. You really got to get introspective and look at that.
And I bet there were a lot of coaches this week who used this Notre Dame loss as a motivation for their team. Hey, we don't want to be Notre Dame again. You know, there's another part to this too, and it has to do with the coordinators, in particular offensive coordinators. All we heard this offseason was Mike Denbrock's return to South Bend as offensive coordinator. He did this at LSU. Now he's going to bring that offensive wizardry to Notre Dame. In today's game, guys, a creative offensive coordinator and a talented quarterback, that can be an amazing match. But if you just have the coordinator and you have a so-so quarterback, is the passing game today too sophisticated for a coordinator to do a whole lot without a top quarterback?
Well, look, it's essential, first of all, to have a competent quarterback to operate structurally all of these offenses that are coming into being right now. You have to understand to take what the defense presents. You don't have to play hero ball, move the sticks, but you've got to have the quarterback. He doesn't have to be the best quarterback in the nation, but he has to be a guy that can operate the offense at all levels. And all levels means making the right decisions, being able to absorb a game plan, be able to understand who you are attacking week to week to week. And it's a huge adage in coaching. It doesn't matter what the coach knows. What matters is what you can translate to the player, what they can absorb, and what they can execute. So both of those have to work in conjunction. Just because a coordinator, an offensive coordinator in particular, as we're talking about, has had success at one place, doesn't necessarily blend into the other. And with the offenses, you got to have a competent, I say competent, quarterback.
We see this at all levels. We see it in the college level. We see it in the pro level. I'll give you a great example in the pro level. You know, if you recruit a quarterback, all right, if you draft a quarterback, RG3 is a good example. They draft him, he goes to Washington, and then the very thing that made him a Heisman Trophy winner, they don't do. They try to change what he's done. I think that is some of it. But bottom line is this. You have to have, and this call emanates from the head football coach, you have to have a offensive play caller or a defensive play caller that works with the talent that he has. How many times over the years have you heard Mac and me say, if you're a defensive coordinator and your guys aren't good at playing man coverage, you better not be playing it when you have to make a stop. Same thing on offense. You have to do what your quarterback allows you to do. If he's more of a runner, you got to run more. If he's more of a passer, you got to pass more. And if he's not very good, you got to punt more.
Around the SEC, the first conference game, a surprise in Lexington, as South Carolina made Kentucky's offense look simply anemic. And there's some grumbling in the bluegrass.
Here's what stood out to me. That first of all, the defense, that was a complete beatdown by South Carolina. Kentucky's quarterback, Vandergriff, 3 of 10, 30 yards, 3 yards per completion, one interception, a quarterback rating, and of course we don't get into numbers a lot on this, but a 1.2. They were smother covered the entire game. The quarterback was really bad. They had four fumbles. They didn't lose any of them. The opportunistic defense of South Carolina, four sacks, one interception. This was a complete and total beatdown by the South Carolina defense, especially two young edge rushers against Kentucky's offense.
Well, that was what the impressive thing to me was, the rushing, the pass rush. Listen, one thing we've learned about Shane Beamer, he's been head football coach, I think this is his fourth year. When he has teams that a lot of people think will underperform, they normally overperform, and vice versa. When he has a team that they think is really going to be pretty good, sometimes they underperform. That's number one, and you can tell that by if you ever listen to him talk, that's the way he go. That's the way he really navigates the season, I think. But watching that, and I watched a little bit of the replay of it. Defensively, their pass rush, and Kentucky normally, we've only gone through two games, but normally has a very good offensive line. They got assaulted in this game of South Carolina. Mac just gave you the stats. That wasn't all on the quarterback. A lot of it was. But defensively, pass rush in particular, South Carolina was impressive.
How about this for a number? 346. That's Mississippi State's rushing defense allowed that versus Arizona State last week.
Arizona State, in this era of throwing the football, and they're a spread offensive football team, they only had 69 yards passing. Their running back had 33 carries, one guy, 262 yards. The longest was only 39. You know, sometimes when you have that much yardage, you have a 80-yard run or two in there. Only 39 yards, wasn't even really a splash play. He also had 35 yards receiving, 297 yards against a Southeastern Conference defense.
Yeah, well, you ask, is Mississippi State struggling through different coaches, different schemes? That may have a little something to do with it, but when you look at it, they don't have the dominating dudes down front that they've had in recent past either. Now, Mississippi State has had some guys. Now, this to me, and the other thing is, it takes more than just the defensive front to defend the run, and that's on the entire defense. It was poor tackling. It was poor gap fits. Anything that you want to say. And the other thing is Arizona State took their will away from them. Coaches just said they kept pounding it. They kept pounding it.
Three head coaches in 3 years. That's kind of what you get with a team when you're switching, changing coaches and changing assistant coaching personnel.
Timeout call. The analysis next. Coach to coach, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
There are a lot of physical therapists in Tennessee, and you don't want to go to a therapist. You want to choose the therapist that is right for you. This is Charles Davis. I had injuries in my playing days and valued the importance of a quality rehab program. I know and trust these folks, which is why I would choose Star when in Tennessee, and you should too. Their clinicians have world-class advanced training to make them great mechanics of the human body and to get you better fast. Find a Star location near you at starpt.com.
You know, starting to save for your future doesn't have to be difficult. Let Wilson Bank and Trust help tone up your financial goals this year. Our certificates of deposits or CDs can help your money work harder with our competitive rates, earning you more than ever before. WBT checking options allow you to earn rewards you can really use, like a high interest rate or cash back on check card purchases when you meet some e-banking qualifications. Visit your closest Wilson Bank and Trust office or online at wilsonbank.com to get started today. Member FDIC.
Pay the order of hope, promise, tomorrow. For years, the Tennessee Lottery has written some pretty big checks, but it turns out that our biggest winner continues to be education. In fact, we've raised more than $7.5 $1 billion and provided more than 2 million scholarships and grants for Tennessee students. Learn more about how lottery dollars are making a difference at tnlottery.com. It's game-changing, life-changing fun.
Time at the Coach to Coach Lessons. How did Tennessee grade out? What lessons stand out from the NC State game?
Defense was stifling. 143 yards, three turnovers. Vols defense, basically, they strangled every aspect of the NC State offense. Coverage was tight. The defensive front seven, they were smothering. It was just total domination. The defense, that's as good a defensive performance as I've seen this year, at least, in the collegiate game. That was total domination in a national look.
Best part for me was the defensive fundamentally. They were fundamentally sound in almost everything they did. I'm sure there was a player or two that we missed, but the best defense, I text the coach, Tim Banks, afterwards, after the ball game. I've been watching Tennessee football for a long, long time, easily in the last decade, maybe even 15 years, by far the best defense against a quality opponent. Now, this was a quality opponent, not a great opponent, but a quality opponent. I don't know how you could ask much more. You score on defense. Mac and I were kind of laughing about this, in the locker room afterwards. If I'd have been that defensive coordinator, you could very easily look at the offensive guy and say, if you guys would have just punted the ball every time, we would have won 7-3 because we scored seven and only gave up three.
Well, they have not allowed a defensive touchdown yet. And you really can't get better than that. Of all the stats for a defense, the most important is points allowed. But they're doing it as a group. It's a team defense. Coach is right when he's talking about their fundamentals. Up front, they can rotate guys in there, and there's no drop-off. The linebackers are triggering much faster, and they've got guys in the secondary now that can line up and play man-to-man, and we're starting to see all of that come together.
Yeah, eight quarters, zero touchdowns. Obviously, you win a lot of ball games if you do that. But, it's how they looked and the way that they looked and the way that they played. There'll be some hiccups, I'm sure, somewhere down the road, but they got 11 guys out there, and they got some pretty darn good backups that we're starting to see now. This is going to be, I think, the best defense, certainly, that Tim Banks and Josh Heupel have had at Tennessee.
Excellent man-to-man coverage by the secondary throughout the game, especially versus Concepcion. We talked about this wide receiver going into it from the lessons last week, looking at this thing, and Jolly, the tight end. Concepcion and Jolly, they're quality players, and they were basically covered all evening long. Very aggressive up front pressure, hand-in-hand with tight coverage and aggressive coverage. They basically shut that thing down.
First off, it all starts up front in pass defense. Three batted balls by rushers. Those don't even make it past the line of scrimmage. But secondarily-wise, no splash plays. 50% of the yardage that they got was yards after catch. We talked last week about the two young men, this Concepcion youngster, number 10 and number 15 coming into the ball game. They got most of their yards in that first drive and only 104 yards passing. And what, something a little adds to that, about the last probably three, maybe four drives, they had their backup players in there on defense. So, again, only one game, but it was an impressive game defensively without question.
And it kind of started, Dave, on the first drive of the game. The Vols gave up a lot of yards, three third down conversions. The Wolfpack ate 8 minutes off the clock. But then the Tennessee defense stiffened up and didn't give up any points.
Well, that last statement, no points, is the whole thing. 0 points, that's the goal. Yardage is insignificant. Insignificant. Yardage is one of the most overused stats in the history of football. It's insignificant for a defense if the drive ends in no points. They accomplished that in spades.
We're talking about throughout this start to the season about being more aggressive for the Tennessee secondary. The pick six before halftime, Dave, really seemed to take NC State out of the game completely.
The interception return for a TD before the half, that was a momentum starter. That was a generator there. And that was a big statement. Will Brooks, a safety, took it. That made a 17-3 lead. And while we're talking about this, we've talked about how much tighter the coverage is. It also has to blend in with their being able to play off of one another. And I'd like to mention Ricky Gibson and Jermon McCoy, too, at corners. They played a really good football game to allow the safety to be able to cover his man. But that was that started the whole ball rolling.
Let's talk a little bit about that pick six and then about the defensive front. Happened to have an end zone. They had an end zone shot in that ball game. And if you looked real closely, and most people wouldn't, what caused that interception was Joshua Joseph backup edge rusher coming in, got his hands up and made the quarterback throw the ball about a foot or two higher, a little high. The ball was overthrown, and a big, 85-yard touchdown return. Will Brooks is going to get all the praise for that. Should Joshua Joseph should get at the very least, an assist, because, again, he made him throw the ball over his hand. That was after a couple of passes had been batted down. So that's one of the advantages of getting those hands up on defense, make them throw a little bit higher. You're not out here throwing against air. You got to get a little bit higher. It set up a big touchdown on that. Just a couple things defensively, though, this defensive front. They're going to start four. They have five seniors that rotate in and four juniors. That's nine players that are rotating in a ball game, and they will continue to do that. They're going to play 10 to 12 players every single ball game if they're healthy. 10 defensive linemen. All right, 10 defensive linemen had a tackle in this. And the two leading tacklers for the whole game were two inside rushers, Eason and Thomas. Mac, I can't recall a defensive tackle. Now, defensive end, a little bit different. But defensive tackle, two of them, I can't recall any in the last 10, 12 years that I've followed Tennessee or most teams that have a tackle. Defensive tackles don't do that. That just shows you how dominating that front was in this game.
And that dovetails right into this. 39 rushing yards allowed on 28 carries. 13 tackles for loss involving 16 different players. West, Bailey, Norman Lott were very disruptive. When they rotated in there, this defensive front and their rotation ability is key right now to this entire defensive success. The offense has no time to generate any momentum.
Those defensive tackles in particular, they got Coach Garner and Coach Banks. Coach Garner is the defensive line coach. They got a pretty unique situation there. They can go very big and run stoppers. You know, that's primarily Simmons and Omari Thomas, although Omari's a good pass rush too. But then Eason and particularly Norman Lott bring in quickness in there that can actually put pressure on the quarterback. Lott is 6'3", 315, but one of the quicker players on defense. So they got a lot of options in there when they're substituting people in. And I'll go back again to the thinking, and Coach Garner has always done this wherever he's been, playing 10 to 12 players. When you get into the fourth quarter or when you get into key pass rush situations where you got to have a stop, you can substitute those best players back in there that give you that pass rush ability. It's impressive to watch.
Peely was very decisive as a linebacker playing behind all of these guys. Had some nice trigger tackles. He's a difference maker at that middle linebacker slot. He's decisive. He's instinctive. Very physical. He's a sure tackler. He ties the front and to the back end very, very well. You don't need that personal foul. You don't need that. I like his physical nature, though.
Doug, against a better opponent, did you see good signs from the secondary?
Absolutely. Five players, the first five starters, guys that went in the game last year, all left. A couple of them graduated, a couple of them transferred out. The sixth got injured in practice and is missing the whole season. So they really have five brand new, as far as starter go, players on this team right now. Three of them are transfers, portals that came in this year. All of them could do something that Tennessee has not been able to do, and that's play man coverage. Coach Banks has been hamstrung a little bit because they're not a good man coverage team. Now they are, or at least they are. You put that with that pass rush we just talked about. They're going to. That's when you get interceptions, and get interceptions that get returned for touchdowns.
They still need to continue time on task with communication, because as I said, five new members there. They've not played many snaps together. they will get better with their communication. They will also get better with playing off of one another. But this group, Coach is talking about this, but this group has the ability. They've got confidence. If you put them on an island out there, they are willing to wear the hat doing that. That's a huge, huge plus for the defensive coordinator.
Play calls. Official calls. Wrong calls. We break it all down. Driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. This is Coach to Coach.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a ride share. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
When it's time for the big game, big fans need big TVs, and at Double Dogs, you can even satisfy big appetites. With choices like black Angus burgers, wings tossed in homemade sauces, and dog bowl nachos, well, Double Dogs will make sure you get the fuel you need for lunch, dinner, or even a post-game snack. So whether you have two legs or four, you can cheer on and chow down at Double Dogs. Visit DoubleDogs.biz to view the menu and order online. Double Dogs, sit, stay, eat.
Pay the order of hope, promise, tomorrow. For years, the Tennessee Lottery has written some pretty big checks, but it turns out that our biggest winner continues to be education. In fact, we've raised more than $7.5 billion and provided more than 2 million scholarships and grants for Tennessee students. Learn more about how lottery dollars are making a difference at tnlottery.com. It's game-changing, life-changing fun.
Whether you're a big-time college coach or run a business, success demands five-star talent. The same is true for your heavy lifting equipment. Hi, I'm Dwayne Hardy from Forklift Systems. Our team will perform a free productivity, safety, and cost analysis of your fleet. We'll identify your MVPs and let you know which equipment to trade or cut. Remember, if you're not improving, your competition is. Win championships with your customers. Visit ForkliftSystems.com today.
Examining the Tennessee-NC State lessons as we get set for the Vols and Kent State Saturday night at Neyland Stadium. This is Coach to Coach.
Coach Josh Heupel, in this particular ball game, maybe it's something we're going to see this year, did something he hadn't done too often since he has been at Tennessee. He mixed in a fast-paced pedal-of-the-metal game plan that we know that can snap the ball with about 32 seconds left on a 40-second clock. And then, much of this ball game, with the starters in there, he deliberately used the clock to slow the game down. For whatever reason, don't know. But I suspect we're going to see more of this. For whatever reason, again, he's shown a little bit of that in the first ball game, but particularly in this game, where he would go fast, then he'd slow it down a little bit. He started out coming out the next time, maybe slowing down a little bit, going fast. I think it does a couple of things. It gives him the ability to run a little time off the clock if necessary. It gives him time to maybe talk and think a little bit about what he wants to do. But kind of it was something different that we haven't seen from Coach Heupel his first 3 years at Tennessee.
Well, this throws the defensive rhythm off. They're getting ready for hurry up, hurry up, hurry up as a defensive staff and as defensive players on the field. Then they start to experience it. They get into that rhythm. That throws the defensive rhythm off. It eats clock, as coaches mentioned, but the slower tempo, that takes reps away from the opponent also. This is a nice, nice addition to what this offense is. This offense is multi-layered. It's not just a single – he doesn't just have a single pitch. He's got several pitches that he's starting to show.
An impressive thing in this ball game that really stood out to me from an offensive viewpoint was this. You know, splash plays, long passes, long runs have kind of been a staple when Coach Heupel's offense is running well. This ball game with 44 offensive points only had one splash play the whole game. That was a pass to Squirrel White, about a 35-40 yarder down there. But the rest of the time, they were able to drive the ball, keep the ball, one of the few times in Tennessee offense since Coach Hype has been there, they actually won the time of possession game, and that's a must ball game. Must in tough ball games when you're playing excellent defense. You're not going to get splash plays, too many if any, against the Georgias. You're not going to get those against the top defensive teams. You have to be able to drive that football, pick up those key third down situations, but keep moving that ball. If you rely on splash plays to win games, certainly you would love to have some, but if you rely on that to win, when you play the really good defensive teams, you're going to be kind of between a rock and a hard place.
Run game was dominant, and it involved the offensive line, clearly, but the tight ends. They deployed more 12 personnel in this game, which is two tights, two wides, and one back in the game. And the tight ends were used a lot in what we call counter OF, pulling the offside guard, and then the second tight end coming through as a second blocker, pulling across the center to be able to swab the hole and fit their hats up on whoever shows up in that gap. Those run schemes and those crunch run schemes where it's just the tight end coming across to either come up underneath or to seal an edge, it gashed the 3-3-5 defense of North Carolina State. This was a nice tactical move by the head coach. 44 carries, 249 yards, 3 touchdowns, 5.7 average. That game plan was outstanding. The 3-3-5 was not ready for the 12 personnel. I can say that with certainty just watching that right there. They had very poor fits on the gap schemes. Great job of manipulating the defense.
That's something that Coach Heupel has, and Coach Halsey. Coach Halsey is the offensive coordinator. Coach Heupel calls the plays. But they have this in their quiver. You know, Mac just mentioned, I'm sure that the North Carolina State group a defense looked at, hey, they're going to have three wides. They're going to have a tight end. They put in motion some. We've really got to be able to cover these three. He started the ball game, played a lot of it with those two tight ends, that 12 personnel the coach just talked about on that. Tight ends put in there, I think, primarily going in for blocking purposes, maybe a little help on pass protection. They got two transfer portal plays, Kitzelman and Stays. And then they got this young Eric Davis, who's a redshirt freshman. But 23 pass attempts, not completions, 23 targets, 9 of those were to one of those tight ends. So not only was the game plan to be able to run the ball with them, it was to get the ball to them because, as Mac mentioned, defensively, they were playing really trying to cover those outside skill receivers. So they were able and smart in getting the ball to their tight ends. Not only were 9 of those passes, both touchdown passes were to tight ends.
This could be very beneficial to this offense. It forces different defensive personnel matchups. Teams play nickel, then you can gash it with the run with two tight ends. They're going to match linebackers, then you can force one-on-one with the wide receivers. And as Coach is talking about here, they've got some play action. Those guys, the tight ends, are not only blockers, they can also run routes, especially from the tight end position or in a movement type across the formation. They can run routes. You force the defense to match up differently. It's a complete switch defensive mindset playing against 11 personnel than it is playing against 12 personnel.
One thing, too, on this, it goes back to that transfer portal, the way they utilize transfer portal. Kitzelman came from Alabama. Stays came from Notre Dame. So they experienced them playing big ball games. And again, those are two transfer portal players, both of them. Really are starters on this offense.
When you've got a first-year starter at quarterback, you're obviously going to have peaks and valleys, no matter how much talent the signal caller has. Nico seemed to respond well to kind of a slow start and that early pick.
Very important maturity development for a young quarterback to learn to leave bad plays behind and reset mentally. Critical for quarterbacks to have a short memory. Get back on track with confidence and execution. He did that in this game. That's growth.
Well, number 8's quickly, rapidly growing into a top-flight quarterback, and not just in talent, but the way that he manages the game and his poise. You know, he's only started 12 quarters. Going back to last year's bowl game, that includes last year's bowl game against Iowa, and then 4 quarters, 2 games this year. So and I'm not sure he played in the fourth quarter. But every game, not every play, but every game, he is gaining experience.
Heupel's also used him as a runner, but very judiciously right now. He's a long strider. He can cover ground. He's not exposing him right now to too many hits, which is very, very smart at this point. You get to the Southeastern Conference play, you're going to see some plays, because if the quarterback is a runner, and if he is a designated runner, and he is a planned runner, you got a plus one on defense to be able to take care of that. We're going to start seeing some more of that, because this kid can run the ball.
And one thing about him running the ball, Mac, it was kind of showed up in this ball game. He's a long strider. He's 6'5", 6'6", got long legs. And as Mac and I know from both playing out there but also coaching out there, those long-legged guys, they're taking strides. It doesn't look like they're that fast when you watch them on tape. One of the first plays of the game last year in that first quarter, he got outside. Guys had angles on him, and they beat him to the corner because they weren't expecting him to be that fast. So a long strider, faster than he looks. And I think you're going to see Mac hit on something I think is really going to be important going forward. Games like Kent State that we're going to play, the first game, and then a couple maybe going forward on this, they're not going to use him on that. But if you're going to beat the Georgias, and if you're going to beat the big teams in this league with this offense, your quarterback in those ball games has to utilize his legs to pick up key first and tens.
I want to ask you about one play that Josh Heupel used a couple of times against NC State to some great reward, the shovel pass. Dave, why does that one work so well?
This is used against a vertical charging defense who's a single gap, which a 3-3 is, and that hits the outside shoulder of the gaps on the snap. Two things you have to have. The first thing about this is if they drop it, it's an incomplete pass. There's no fumble possibility for that. The other thing is it slows down the rush. It slows down the rush for future snaps. And so and also what it does, it really messes with the eye discipline of the linebackers. But you've got to be very, very timely when you use it. But normally when you use it and it hits, it's a big play. It's a completed pass. It's a completed pass, but people that are charging up the field, it's like a trap play without being a trap.
When Mac and I were coordinating defenses way back when, to slow down the pass, what did offenses do? They ran the draw play. Tennessee doesn't have a draw play in their offense. This is their draw play. The shovel pass goes back, used to be called the Utah pass, goes back to the University of Utah, ran it back in the 1950s. But what it does is this. It slows the rush down, and it also keeps those linebackers from dropping too deep to be able to come up there. In this ball game, they ran three or four of them. About the third one, North Carolina State adjusted to it and had their linebackers stand up in there. Well, Tennessee adjusted to that. Had the next time they ran it, they had their center block one of those linebackers. But keeping those linebackers thinking about that, what does it do? It opens up those crossing routes back in the back. So it is a draw play. But the advantage of it is, as Mac said, if the ball's dropped or if you throw it at his feet, it's an incomplete pass.
Amazing moments, special players, stories you may not know. Doug Matthews, Checkerboard Chronicle.
1985 season. Darryl Dickey, backup quarterback, starting quarterback. Tony Robinson gets hurt in the Alabama game, which ended up being a win. Enter Darryl Dickey, who had played, never started a ball game in his 4 years at Tennessee, and had played very, very few snaps. As a matter of fact, except for an odd occurrence that happened his freshman year, he would not have been on the team. He'd have been out of eligibility. He got there in 1991, fall practice, before the season started, broke his leg. All right, Darryl Dickey's dad, of course, Doug Dickey, decided to hold him out, so he did not enter school until the second semester. If he would have entered school at the first semester, he would have been out of eligibility after the 1984 season. So, number one, he shouldn't even have been there. Number two, he was backing up one of the best quarterbacks that ever played at the University of Tennessee, and after an injury, was forced into the starting lineup. All he did was lead the team the rest of the way, undefeated, to the Sugar Bowl. And in the Sugar Bowl, Darryl Dickey, little used, little thought of, most people didn't even know his number, was the MVP of one of the biggest wins in Tennessee football history a 35-7 win over the University of Miami.
This is Coach to Coach with former University of Tennessee defensive coordinator Doug Matthews
and former NFL defensive coordinator and head coach Dave McGinnis, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. In Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk.
Hi, I'm Dwayne Hardy of Forklift Systems. Whether you're a big-time college coach or run a business, to be successful, you need five-star talent. It's also true for your heavy lifting equipment. Forklift Systems will perform a free productivity, safety, and cost analysis of your fleet. We'll identify your MVPs and what you need to trade or cut. If you're not constantly improving, your competition is. Win championships with your customers. Visit ForkliftSystems.com today.
At Great Clips, they know you got a lot going on, just like I have. That's why they save my haircut details and clip notes, so I can get the same haircut as the last time whenever I want. No stress, no worries, no questions asked. And with 60 salons in the Middle Tennessee area, it's easy to find a Great Clips location near you. I've been a client of Great Clips for over 10 years, and if you're looking for a great cut, simply download their online check-in app today. Great Clips, it's going to be great.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
Pay the order of hope. Promise. Tomorrow. For years, the Tennessee Lottery has written some pretty big checks, but it turns out that our biggest winner continues to be education. In fact, we've raised more than $7.5 billion and provided more than 2 million scholarships and grants for Tennessee students. Learn more about how lottery dollars are making a difference at tnlottery.com. It's game-changing, life-changing fun.
SEC lineup Saturday begins with Alabama at Wisconsin. Dave McGinnis, how are you liking these home game power program matchups as compared with those kickoff classic type events?
During the season, I like the on-campus home game atmosphere and the vibe of it. The other thing about it is you're getting ready for the first round campus home games in the postseason. I'm all for this. I think it's very, very interesting for the fans.
Also early, LSU visits South Carolina. Boston College tangles with Missouri. Florida hosts Texas A&M. Aggies haven't won a true road game since 2021. Oklahoma hosts Tulane. There's been concern all week about inconsistency with Oklahoma's start to this season. This is Coach to Coach. Before we talk about Kent State, couple of officiating points for our coaches this week. First one, and the NFL spent a lot of time in week one emphasizing this, but it was also called in the Vols' win over NC State. Being more precise, guys, about where the tackles line up. Doug, take us inside this rule.
Well, first off, it is about time. What has happened over the years in college football? Here's the rule that an offensive lineman, where his alignment should be. Your helmet, if you're any offensive lineman, needs to be at least at the level of the belt of a offensive center. So it's very easy to see. What's happened over the years is, though, we see it at Pro Bowl, too. I was glad to see it called in the NFL. I didn't think I'd ever see it called in the NFL. But those offensive tackles, they keep getting deeper and deeper and deeper. Why? To get away from those speed pass rushers out there on it. Finally, they started doing something about this. And let me tell you what you're going to see, because if they continue to put emphasis on this, and I think they will, if they continue to put emphasis on this, you're going to see more sacks. Because those offensive tackles out there, they're big guys, long arms. You put that defensive pass rusher off there, James Pierce Jr. is one of them, it just gives him an advantage. This has been, they've been moving further and further and further back. It hasn't been a line of scrimmage. It's been a bowl of scrimmage, at least with those tackles on that. They'll call that early, but the question is going to be, when they get into heated ball games, are they going to call it then? I'm going to be anxious to watch that, Mac.
No, usually what they do, they'll come to the sideline. They'll warn you one time. But that flying wedge, it looks like geese flying south. It's a V, and that's a huge, huge advantage. It forces the outside rush element to run a big curve to get to a quarterback launch point. It's a huge advantage for the offense in pass protection. And I am so glad that they're starting to enforce it. Not only enforce it, it's always been a rule. Now they're starting to dial in on it.
Another play that I guess has to drive special teams coaches crazy, the block in the back. I know they're trying to get the broadside hits out of the game. Doug, how did you coach this?
It is blocks that are – you can block legally from the side if you get your head in front and you get that head behind. The best way I ever heard it explained was this. A coach told me one time, he said, Doug, don't ever block the large numbers. If you can see the big number, that means you're looking at his back block. If you can't see the small number, let him go on that. It can be kind of questionable occasionally, but here's the thing on that. Officials on every kick, whether it be the kickoff coverage or the punt coverage, officials, every official on the team is looking for a blindside block or a block that where you hit in the back. So that's one of the things. That's one of the reasons, quite frankly, a lot of people are just fair catching the ball in college football now and taking the ball to the 35-yard line.
If you can see the name and the number on the back of the jersey, here's what we always used to tell them. Drive by, don't drive through. That pretty much sums it up right there. Because that's a huge penalty. It's a huge, huge penalty. It flips the momentum of the game, especially if you have a positive return. So if you see the name and the number, drive by.
Well, and the other part of that, too, is it goes into that rule are the crackback blocks, the blindside blocks that they've really, really stepped up. If it's even close now to hitting a not really a defenseless, they call it defenseless defender, but one that's not looking, if you even come close to that, that's going to be a 15-yard penalty on that, which should be. So the way you teach those things is screen them. You know, get in position. You don't have to block them. Just get in position where they run into you. You accomplish the same thing. One of the difficulties that happens on that is, Larry, though, a lot of these young men that are on these kicking units, the return units, they're trying to make a name for themselves. They're trying to get off that unit and get to playing. So they're normally pretty darn aggressive, which I understand, but you got to be smart there because wherever that ball is caught, if there's a penalty, there's a 15-yard penalty added where it was caught, not where it ended up.
The other one more coaching point, just pass it up and go to the next threat. If you see his number, if there's any chance you may hit him in the back, pass him up, go get the next threat.
In their dozens of years of coaching, they've made them. Some went wrong. Some were winners. Game time decisions. Coach to coach.
At the end of the first half, I called a six-man blitz with the score tied 6-6. Ball came out quick. The corner got beat on a three-step slant. The safety moved to tackle. The offside safety missed the tackle. And before they made the tackle finally before the end zone, but the opponent called the timeout, kicked a field goal to end the half, gave away 3 points in momentum. Now, you start looking at it and say, well, that's the first half. You only gave up 3 points. Ended up getting beat 23-20. That call right there made a huge difference in the ballgame.
Tablet, clicker, game film. You're in the coach's meeting. Coach to coach, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a ride share. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
When it's time for the big game, big fans need big TVs, and at Double Dogs, you can even satisfy big appetites. With choices like Black Angus Burgers, wings tossed in homemade sauces, and dog bowl nachos, well, Double Dogs will make sure you get the fuel you need for lunch, dinner, or even a post-game snack. So whether you have two legs or four, you can cheer on and chow down at Double Dogs. Visit DoubleDogs.biz to view the menu and order online. Double Dogs, set, stay,
eat.
You know, starting to save for your future doesn't have to be difficult. Let Wilson Bank and Trust help tone up your financial goals this year. Our certificates of deposits or CDs can help your money work harder with our competitive rates, earning you more than ever before. WBT checking options allow you to earn rewards you can really use, like a high interest rate or cash back on check card purchases when you meet some e-banking qualifications. Visit your closest Wilson Bank and Trust office or online at wilsonbank.com to get started today. Member FDIC.
At Great Clips, they know you got a lot going on, just like I have. That's why they save my haircut details in clip notes, so I can get the same haircut as the last time whenever I want. No stress, no worries, no questions asked. And with 60 salons in the Middle Tennessee area, it's easy to find a Great Clips location near you. I've been a client of Great Clips for over 10 years, and if you're looking for a great cut, simply download their online check-in app today. Great Clips, it's going to be great.
This is Coach to Coach, preparing for Week 3 action around the Southeastern Conference, including UAB and Arkansas. Razorbacks, 650 yards of total offense last week, but they couldn't overcome mistakes to get the win. Ole Miss is at Wake Forest. Texas hosts Texas San Antonio. Vanderbilt travels to Georgia State. Kentucky tries to rebound. Not an easy opponent, Georgia. For the Volunteers, it's Kent State. They come to Neyland Stadium 0-2 Saturday. And they've got a rushing defense that is struggling.
Giving up 5.2 yards per attempt. So what that tells you is every time you have two runs in a row, you've got a first down. That's not a recipe for success. It's not a very it's not a very physical defense. I'll just say that very honestly looking at it. And then the speed element in the defense you just don't see.
Well, 9 touchdowns in 2 games they've given up. 39 points a game, 200 yards rushing, 282 passing. 45% of the time on third down, whether short, medium, or long, their opponent is picking it up.
Struggling to stop the run, also struggling to run the ball. The Golden Flashes managed just 78 yards rushing last week against St. Francis of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and St. Francis of Pennsylvania is not a full scholarship team. How in the world that happened, I don't know. Quarterback, the Cargman youngster, he is not a mobile quarterback. 54% passer. 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, doesn't get protected really well. I suspect that they will try to run the football and shorten the ball game against this Tennessee team.
Their skilled players, their leading receiver is Luke Floria. He's a senior wide receiver, 5'10", 173, 12 catches, 196 yards, long of 41, 2 touchdowns. The other wide receiver is Christian McCray. He's 5'10", 163. He's a sophomore, 9 catches, 94 yards, 10.4, 29 is long, 2 touchdowns. Their third leading receiver is their running back, Kai Thomas. He's got 7 for 41. He's 5'11", 200. This is not a big football team.
Average weight on the offensive line is 280 pounds. That's light in today's football. And just looking at the stats and why they've had to throw it so much, as you mentioned, they only had 78 yards rushing against a very small unit in St. Francis. They're not a good run-blocking team. So that means you're probably going to have to throw it, and that's not the way that you want to attack Tennessee's defense, I don't think, this year.
This Tennessee defense can dominate, but let's just go back to they will not. They will not. Knowing the mindset of this coaching staff and Josh Heupel and what they've got going, they will not. They won't overlook this team. They'll prepare for this team. But once it gets into the guts of this game, the Tennessee defense should be able to dominate this group.
Coach to Coach, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. In Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Podcast the show now and catch up before kickoff, where you find podcasts. Coach to Coach.